Did I ever tell you the one about the time we saw Eric Boullier walking down the street?
This is one of our best anecdotes ever,
I think this is a top Formula One anecdote. We saw Eric Boullier walking through the centre of London whilst we were driving in our car.
Yep.
And that is it.
We don't know where he was going.
We don't know what he was doing.
No.
But it definitely was Eric Boullier.
I think, well, we think it was.
No, we know it was. No, I said, is that? Was. And you said, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Best anecdote ever. He was opposite the Ritz. It was about 3 weeks ago. That is all. That's all I got for you. That is the highlight of this show, by the way. It gets no better than that. We saw a man on a street. You come to Side Podcast for the facts, you stay for the stories. Tell me we have more to talk about than that.
I'm sure we can find something. I think we haven't done a show for a little while. We've missed two races, but seeing as Spain was the most recent, we should probably talk about that. Alonso won his home race, which means I got my prediction right. Yes!
First time in a very long time. That's, well done, Christine.
It's not actually. Of the predictions I have made so far this season, I have scored 2 points.
You award yourself points for your own predictions.
It might even be 3 points, actually. Yeah, predict pole, predict the winner, and get a point for each one you get right. And I think I might actually have 3.
So who did you go for pole in Spain that you got wrong then?
Vettel.
Nobody goes against Mercedes in their pace, not in qualifying, not over one lap. I would have given it to you if you'd have said Lewis Hamilton for pole, because I did not expect Nico Rosberg to have the pace on Lewis. Lewis is a prodigious qualifier. How is Nico Rosberg taking the fight to him this year? That is the most impressive thing.
Yeah, but I don't know why, because Hamilton, up until this weekend, he had seemed very, very comfortable and happy. So he should have been on it, but he wasn't.
By my reckoning, that's 2 pole positions for Nico Rosberg this season, only 1 for Lewis Hamilton.
True story. You've taken me away from the main point, though, which was Alonso won his home race, cheered up all the Spanish fans in the crowd. It was a really, really good victory, very strategic. They outfoxed Red Bull, which is always a good thing. He did a fantastic overtake at the beginning and went round the outside.
Passed 2 cars in the first 3 corners. Incredible, actually. Very, very impressive. Great opening lap from Alonso.
And there was also a point where he had a puncture. Yeah. And it didn't affect him because, well, it was about time he had a bit of luck on that front. But also Ferrari seemed to learn their lesson, because there was a choice of leaving him out for an extra lap or calling him in one lap early for his pit stop. And they decided to bring him in because, you know, he had a puncture.
Yes. And apparently the lessons learned from Malaysia weren't enough to instantly bring the guy in. You know, we've got a puncture, we've got pace in hand, we could easily come in 1 or 2 laps ahead of schedule. But no, they actually debated risking leaving a guy out there with a slow puncture on those tyres this season. I don't know how many times he's going to have to throw away a victory as he did in Malaysia, but they really do need to learn the lesson. They do not need to gamble as much as they're trying to gamble.
It was a popular win, given that he was in Spain, and he picked up a Spanish flag on his cool down lap and then had to go to the stewards because of it.
Give me strength.
Ridiculous.
I understand that potentially somebody, you know, a driver could pick up some ballast whilst he's also
collecting. Can't they just have a look at the flag? See, it's not that heavy, it's fine.
There has to come a point when you say these rules are too much. We want to see drivers doing donuts at the end of a Grand Prix.
That's not allowed.
But we want them to be celebrating and pick up their flags and things like that. Why is it so constrained? Do we not trust drivers anymore? Do we not trust teams anymore? I understand in the past there were problems, but there were never so many cameras on teams. There were never so many people in the crowd with their cell phones recording these kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, we have YouTube. We'd notice.
Now you could capture rule infringers if they were to do such a thing. I'm sure these rules can be relaxed somewhat in this day and age.
It was a good race for Ferrari overall, because they took 2 steps on the podium. And
yay for Massa.
Yeah.
Really good. Stuffed it up royally in qualifying. He had a really fast car, held up, was it Mark Webber? He held up another car, got himself a 3-place grid penalty to start the race, and managed to fight his way back to the podium. Good on him. Good on him. Nice to see 2 drivers, 2 Ferrari drivers up there. And I did feel sorry for Kimi Raikkonen in the room they go to when they...
I call it the green room.
The bit before they wander out onto the podium. There was Stefano on the telephone, and he was talking with Alonso, and then Alonso passed the phone to Massa, and there was a whole load of Ferrari discussion going on. And I felt like I wanted to call Kimi, You know, so Kimmy had someone to talk to as well, because he was up there all on his lonesome.
It did look a bit sad, but then again, it's Kimmy, and he probably doesn't want to talk to anyone. He's probably fine.
I wanted to talk
to
him, though. I felt for the guy. Wow. He just needed someone to phone him.
It was a good day for Ferrari and for Lotus. Not so good for Mercedes, who had started the race on the front row.
Ooh, yeah.
They were so good in qualifying, as we mentioned. Over one lap, supreme. Over many laps, rubbish. Rosberg had to bring out his best defensive driving again, but it was to no avail, really.
We haven't done a show since the Bahrain Grand Prix, but this was an almost identical situation that Rosberg faced there. He was on the front row, and he spent the opening laps driving incredibly defensively in Bahrain, and he had to do the same thing again in Barcelona.
He's really very good at the defensive driving.
Rosberg, this year is the making of Rosberg. And whereas in Bahrain he lost a whole load of places, and he couldn't live with the tyres, and he couldn't live with the way his Mercedes was eating them or overheating them. He did a much better job in Barcelona. I think he learnt the lessons from Bahrain, and he managed to capitalise on his woesome chassis. And make the most of what he had, especially compared to his teammate.
Well, yeah, I mean, he still fell down the order and ended up sixth, but then Hamilton just fell backwards massively. He was miserable afterwards. He was out of the points. I think he proclaimed it to be one of his worst races ever. Just not having a good time out there.
Hamilton was wrong-footed from the opening corner of the Grand Prix. Rosberg braked earlier than expected. He flat-spotted both of his front tyres, which is never a good thing that early in the race. But with these tyres and with the temperatures experienced in Spain, it was just the end of his race at that first corner, and there was no way back for him. He couldn't make the tyres work as well as Rosberg managed to. And we did hear a lot of complaints throughout the race. He was bemoaning being overtaken by a Williams at one point, wasn't he?
It was
quite sad.
I'm being overtaken by a Williams.
Yeah, where am I going to end up?
Because as Williams were pretty shocking.
Oh, terrible. Given the relative pace of those two Williams this year, you do not want to be passed by them. I think it was around a corner. It wasn't even in a DRS zone. He was just outpaced by a Maldonado.
Williams brought some updates to the track this past weekend, but it didn't work out for them. They were the two cars that are not the two new teams that dropped out in qualifying.
Yes.
Both of them. That doesn't happen very often.
Each driver is obviously getting the most out of that car, but there is little to be found. There's not a lot of pace there. It doesn't look like the team will be able to claw back the pace they've lost over the winter, because Sauber haven't been as quick as they were last year, but you felt like they had speed at this track. It felt like they brought a new front wing, they've got new aero parts, and it seemed like things were starting to work for them, whereas Williams just had nothing in qualifying and nothing in the race.
Poor Claire Williams, she was being interviewed all over the place and just had to keep saying, look, we're not panicking, we're going to work on it, we'll get there. That's the message coming from Williams at the moment.
Yeah, last year would have been a better year, I think, for Claire to be brought into the fold in her new position as deputy team principal. She's up against it right now, isn't she?
Well, yeah, but then again, you don't want to be brought in and then instantly go down. Surely if you come in at the bottom, the only way is up.
That's true. I do feel sorry for Williams, because last year's car was a really good car, and they've managed to lose more than most over the off-season.
You mentioned Sauber there, and Esteban Gutierrez, he had a 3-place penalty as well for impeding, like Massa did. And I don't really know why, but we don't seem to have much faith in Gutierrez. Has he been involved in lots of accidents or incidents so far? But he actually did really well. He started way down the order and clawed his way up to 11th.
Better than his illustrious teammate, Hülkenberg. Poor Hulk was wrong-footed by his team in the pits, so you can't really compare the two. But I thought Esteban did he put in a much better performance than he has done in the opening in the previous four races, because the guy's been under a boatload of pressure, because he has already had a penalty for taking out a competitor, and pressure is on with so little testing, with so little time to get up to speed. He has to do all his learning on track, and he has to get as much track time as possible. And finally, he might have turned a corner. He might actually be getting somewhere in Spain, and Sauber's decision to employ him may well be justified.
Well, we'll see about that one. Hülkenberg was released into the path of Jean-Éric Vergne, so they crashed together, and Nico was given a 10-second stop-go penalty, which ruined his race. There was lots of action in the pit lane. Force India, they had one of their endless pit stops. You know, that image of Force India just sitting, steaming in the pit lane, not going anywhere as the team run around some kind of cross-threaded wheel nut.
More wheel nut issues.
They actually told Sutil to switch his engine off while they sorted it out so it didn't overheat. Because there was fire concerns.
Thankfully, this time it only affected one driver. Paul de Resta did manage to... He didn't have any pit stop dramas, actually. Somehow, whatever the recurrence was, it only occurred on Sutil's car. He wasn't a happy bunny when he was given the message to turn off the engine, was he? So, you know, his race was ruined. We should also say that... who was it that Hülkenberg took out? Was it Verne? Yeah, Verne's race was over before it began. And that was a big shame because... Toro Rosso looked like they'd found... their pace has been up and down all season, but in Spain it was up. But Verne was taken out and he couldn't do much with it.
And there were wheel issues for Grosjean, whose rear suspension just seemed to crash and burn.
He just gave up. He said, stuff it.
He had a wheel hanging off. And also Guido van der Garde had one of his wheels fall off.
Which was a big disappointment for van der Garde because he had the legs on pick. Now... Like Gutierrez, van der Garde has been under some pressure from his teammate. He's not had a chance to show his speed or what speed the Caterham is capable of. Anyway, finally he managed to get the measure on pick, and then his team screwed it up for him, and they got a fine to boot.
Another team that were hoping the updates they brought to Spain would make a big difference was McLaren, and it. Didn't it sort of did it sort of didn't there was a big surprise in qualifying because Button was outqualified by Perez. I think perhaps that's the first time that's happened this year. And Button started badly,
very badly, dropped to 17th on lap one.
It was Webber-esque.
Atrocious.
McLaren split the strategy between the two, so Button was on a three stop and Perez was on a four stop, and that allowed Jensen to get ahead by the end of the race. But there was also talk of team orders where Perez would not have been allowed past his teammate because they are starting to get a name for themselves in that sense as well.
Well, both of the McLarens seem to end up on the same piece of tarmac at the same time, probably because their pace is so out of whack with their competitors. So the cars around them are either too far ahead of them or too far behind them in order to compete, so they just end up competing with each other. We saw that in Bahrain, where the two had
a minor
coming together, and then it almost happened again at the end of Spain. There was talk that perhaps the team had asked Sergio to hold back, but after the race he did tweet a picture of his front tyre, which had an almighty great big hole in the front of it, so he did not have the means to take the fight to Jensen at this race. Before we move on to the inevitable topic of Pirelli and their F1 tyres, that much under-discussed topic in F1 right now, I did want to take a brief moment to look at the Drivers' Championship, because we have three drivers who are making a break for it in the Drivers' Championship. You have Sebastian Vettel leading Kimi Raikkonen from Fernando Alonso. All of those three drivers look like they are in contention. It's a tight battle at the top, and then Lewis Hamilton is fourth. His car probably doesn't have the chassis to take that fight to them, and Massa's even farther behind. But a three-way fight at this point in time, I'm looking forward to the rest of the season already.
Well, obviously it is still early days and anything could happen, but it does seem like there are two groups. There's the Vettel-Raikkonen group and there's the Hamilton-Massa group, Hamilton-Massa and Webber. And then Alonso seems to be flipping between them depending on whether Ferrari call him into the pits in time or not.
Depending on their strategy.
At the moment he is in the top group and it is very exciting.
It's incredible. I like it. I like what I'm seeing. How are we looking for teams as well? Presumably Red Bull have the run on everybody.
Well, yes, naturally, that is the way of it.
It's a familiar table, the team's table.
It's Red Bull, Ferrari and Lotus. But, of course, the fascinating thing is that McLaren are way down in sixth behind Force India. I mean, how has that happened? And Sauber are behind Toro Rosso.
I expect Sauber to come back, but then Toro Rosso did do quite well. That's going to be one to watch too.
And then, of course, Williams have no points.
Oh, dear.
I think the last time we recorded a show, we talked about the fact that Bridgestone may have left Formula One because they didn't think their name was being said enough in terms of tyres and strategy and racing. Mm. Well, Pirelli, their name is being said far too much.
They are the discussion. The number one most discussed topic in Formula One is Short life tires.
Yeah. It's just endless on and on.
It's almost depressing, actually. The race in Spain, it was an unusual race. It was a different kind of Grand Prix. We haven't seen drivers have to manage their tire temperatures in the way they did in Barcelona. We haven't seen that. I don't think I've ever seen that before. It was possibly an anomaly. It could be a growing, worrying trend, but it certainly stood out as something a little bit different, and tyre temperature sensors have never been more useful to teams than they were as they tried to guide their drivers around the circuit.
Well, it seems like there are two things that people are complaining about, and then sometimes people are getting them mixed up or bundling them all together, and I think they are two quite distinct things, because the first is that there are too many pit stops. In Spain, we had 3 or 4 stops. A few people did 5, but that's usually because they had penalties.
There were actual planned stops were the maximum of 4, but we've seen that in races gone by. I mean, this isn't the first race that we've seen a 4 stopper. And 3 stops, I understand that Pirelli are aiming for 3 stops per race, and more than 3 stops could be perceived to be somewhat hectic. But, I mean, you could look back through Formula 1 history and see that teams in the past have made 4-stop strategies work. It's not that unusual. The real problem, I guess, is that pit stops are so darn quick that cars are in and cars are out and cars are in and cars are out. Without refueling, the order is continually rotating. You have car drivers coming in. I think we saw Gutierrez lead a lap or lead several laps at this Grand Prix just as the leaders fell off into their pits and to take, you know, to start their full stop strategies.
Yeah, and I am known to get very confused when the pit stop orders change and you have to see who is really in front and who is theoretically in front. But actually, the Spanish Grand Prix, I did not find that confusing. So if people that are basing the complaints on that race, I don't really get it. But then the other problem is the Red Bull side of complaining, which is that the drivers are not able to push their cars to the limit. They're driving to the limit of the rubber, not to the limit of the cars, and that's just not racing.
According to
Red Bull.
Well, everybody at Red Bull. I was specifically thinking of names. I mean, Horner has complained about it. Helmut Marko has complained about it. Weber and Vettel both complained about it loudly. And I think this week, Mr. Matichitz, he had some strong opinions to voice on the matter of Formula 1. I mean, we could go back through the previous history of Red Bull and Pirelli and find that Sebastian Vettel has won at least a race, if not several races, on a full-stop strategy. So I think Red Bull are doing a really good job of muddying the waters and trying to mix up these two quite distinct arguments. They clearly don't like these tyres because they can't get their aerodynamically efficient newy car up to its maximum pace, because at its maximum pace, it eats through its tyres, and that upsets them.
There's a great post by Gary Anderson on the BBC that looks at some data from the last 4 years of Spanish Grand Prix, which includes 1 year of Bridgestone. But he says that in 2011, Vettel won the Spanish Grand Prix. He also made 4 pit stops, and there were 77 pit stops in the entire race. There were no complaints from Red Bull then.
What year was that?
2011.
And how many pit stops were there this year? 79? It was somewhere, it was within the same, I forget exactly what the figure is, but it's within the same ballpark. We are not that far away from previous years. And last year's Grand Prix wasn't confusing to Red Bull because they won it, so they were happy. So they are the first to complain when things don't go their way, which reminds me somewhat of an old Ferrari team. And if you told me 10 years ago that Ferrari would be the good guys who are arguing for more racing and for pushing these Pirellis to the limit and doing 4 stops and making it work. And in the opposite end, there were Red Bull who were the evil team who were complaining all the time because they couldn't get things the way they wanted. I would have laughed in your face. But actually, we've had a complete role reversal where Red Bull, you know, it's outgoing and fan-friendly team are the ones who are attempting to ruin Formula 1 for their own gain. And then you have Ferrari putting their hands up and going, hold on a second. We're just racing. We're out there doing the best we can, going as fast as we can and winning races. What's wrong with that?
I can't think that it's any coincidence that this week the Ferrari Horse Whisperer blog came back. The anonymous writer with their very direct comments, because the headline quote from Red Bull's Dietrich Mateschitz was, "This has nothing to do with racing anymore. This is a competition in tyre management. Real car racing looks different." And the Horse Whisperer said, "These are difficult times for people with poor memories. Maybe it's because Maybe it's because of the huge amount of information available today that people are too quick to talk, forgetting things that happened pretty much in the recent past. Or maybe the brain cells that control memory only operate selectively, depending on the results achieved on track by their owners.
Mm.
Ooh, burn.
I can't imagine that Mr. Matichitz pays any attention to Formula One at any given time. and Christian Horner or Helmut Marko has gone to him and said, this is really bad. Can you kick up a fuss? Because we want our Adrian Newey car to go as fast as we possibly can make it. I did want to mention a tweet from Pit Lane Monster via Viva F1 I caught in the week, actually, which mentioned that it's not only, Formula One isn't only a competition of time management right now, but it's also a competition of engine management, because obviously we have homologated engines, which are limited to 9 per year. And on top of that, it's also a competition of gearbox management, because obviously you damage your gearbox, you take a grid penalty. And so drivers have to manage the package they've got, the tyres, the engine, the gearbox, all these limited life components, they've got to manage them and not stretch or stress any of them during any race to make sure that they get to the end of the season without receiving any kind of penalty. And Formula One is not, and has not been for a very long time, about having the fastest car in the fastest condition, going at it lap after lap after lap. It hasn't been that way, actually, since refueling was banned, because now you fill the cars, you fill the cars to the brim.
You're managing the fuel.
Mm, again, there you go. You're turning your engines down, as we saw in wherever the hell it was when the team orders debate kicked off with Red Bull. And with Mercedes, they didn't put enough fuel in the car, and the drivers couldn't go all out, because if they had, they wouldn't have got to the end on the fuel that they've been given. And so Formula One, for as long as I can remember, has been about making the best of what you've got in any given condition.
Well, it is exactly
the tyres that you've been given.
It is exactly that. And that's what a lot of the arguments are. Like Gary Anderson says that in his blog. And I think Will Buxton may have argued in that direction as well. And it just is that way, because every year F1 is going to change, because these are the best people. These are the best drivers, the mm-hmm. best engineers, the best mechanics. So every year they are going to get on top of it. Then the next year we have to change it. Otherwise it's just going to be exactly the same as it was the year before. So things have to change. And then it's up to them to make the most of it, fight for pace with the conditions that they have. And that is what makes F1 so brilliant. And that is why Red Bull are stupid.
They are. Well, stupid is a very, very, very mild and polite term to call them right now. I'm hugely disappointed in that team. What a disaster of a marketing operation that's really becoming. Red Bull, they are destroying the kind of energy and feel that they're supposed to give to their brand, you know, with things like X Games and Crash Dice and all the good things they do. In Formula One, they're undoing it all. It's unraveling.
It's so disappointing, because they started so well.
They did.
The party team. We keep on going on about it, but it's just every week that goes by, they're becoming just more annoying, Ferrari. More corporate.
With every passing week, they're becoming Ferrari. And Ferrari are becoming more like Red Bull. It has to be repeated that the person who won the last Grand Prix is Fernando Alonso, arguably the best driver on the grid at the moment, and a former 2 times world champion. If Formula One was not about the best man in the best car winning the races, if it was a lottery, if Pastor Maldonado has gone out in his Williams and won again, you know, if he did what he did last year in a car that has no pace and has no business being at the front of the Grand Prix, I'd be the first to put my hands up and go, this is not racing, this is not right. But that isn't the case. The best driver on the grid won the race because he's the best driver. And that is proof to me that Formula One is just perfect right now. I wouldn't change a single thing. And yet, so many people are kicking up such a fuss about nothing in my eyes. I can't see what there is to complain about right now.
What is worrying is that Red Bull almost seemed that they were going to get their way, because up until, well, breaking news, up until this point, we thought that Pirelli were going to capitulate, change their tyres, make them more durable, and essentially put the championship right in Vettel's hands.
Yes.
But we've just seen a story that says the FIA won't allow it, because the regulations state any changes to the tyre compounds can only be for safety reasons and not just to mess about with the championship.
There are so many things wrong with this. I don't know where to begin, but I must mention that in 2003, when the FIA stepped in and changed the tyre regulations to the detriment of the Michelin teams, A move which effectively gave the World Championship that year to Michael Schumacher. That ruined that season for me. So meddling with tyre regulations is a bad thing. And I don't really, I wouldn't like Pirelli to make any changes. However, they already made a tyre change for the Spanish Grand Prix. They made the hard tyre harder, right? Which was turned out to be a good thing, as the tyres basically ate themselves as it was. So maybe that was a fine thing. But how come the FIA allowed that change but are now not allowing further changes?
Well, we don't know specifics because this has only just emerged. But I think it seems as though the making compounds slightly different is okay. But if you're going to like rebuild your tyre to make it more durable and more like the 2012 tyres, that's not going to be allowed.
Okay.
But I must say, I was really disappointed with Pirelli for giving in and saying, yeah, okay, we'll change. I mean, I know they're under a lot of pressure. There's a lot of heat. Everyone is hating on them for all the wrong reasons. But they've been so good at saying, look, we're just doing what we were asked to do. These are the tyres. Live with it.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've praised them often in the past, they've had the fans put the fans first in terms of action and ignored what the teams had to say, basically. And it just seems like they just, I guess...
They rolled over.
Something broke inside them and they couldn't take it anymore.
I can see that there have been multiple delaminations of rear tyres in the past two races, and that isn't good for their brand for that to be seen on television. So I can understand that they are slightly wary, and they have been... They're doing exactly what they've been asked to do. I did like that. I think it was Paul Hembree said post-race in Spain that if Fernando Alonso had suffered the punch he suffered this year with a previous year's tyre, he wouldn't have got back to the pits the way he had. So they have made progress. It's just, I don't think fans understand what they're seeing. And part of that is down to the commentators, because the commentators are doing an unbelievably terrible job, I think, certainly the UK commentators that we're watching, in explaining what's going on in Formula One. And it's almost like as if the commentators can't comprehend it, they're throwing Pirelli into the fire and saying, well, it's all Pirelli's fault because I just can't commentate on this.
This week we watched the BBC because the Spanish Grand Prix was on the BBC. And I didn't think that was too bad, but Martin Brundle seems to have been really upset by what he saw.
Yeah, maybe he's just, if you can, if he can't cope with commentating on a Formula One race, maybe he's past it and he should move on and let someone else do it. But I know that he stoked the fires post-race by saying, I think he was joking, but he said his phone was so hot with tweets, he didn't put it in his pocket because he had such a barrage of abuse coming in his Twitter account, which clearly just incited fans to send more of it. So he's making the problem worse. It's worth keeping in mind that I really enjoyed the race, but I didn't tweet Martin Brundle to say that I enjoyed it. So he's not getting a biased view of Formula One fans. He's getting a very single-minded view from a very vocal minority.
It's not all Brundle. I also thought Susie Perry, who is going down in my estimation
every
the more
race.
I see it, I must say, but she was saying, yeah, we didn't like all these pit stops and we didn't like this. I think we can all agree that no one likes what we saw today.
What?
Well, no, we can't all agree that. And since, I don't think you're the one to tell us what we should be thinking.
Since when did Susie Perry speak for the voice of the Formula One fans? So, I loved that Grand Prix. I really did. There was nothing I would have changed about the Spanish Grand Prix. I enjoyed it from the beginning to the very end. So no, stuff you, Susie Perry. I don't agree that just, we didn't like it.
It feels more like the commentators and the pundits, they should be there to evaluate and ask the question, but not necessarily tell us what we should be thinking.
Well, the commentator's job is to explain the complexities of the sport. And if the race is beyond their understanding, they shouldn't be doing the job they're doing. It's not their job to then turn around and go, well, it's someone else's fault. I can't follow this race anymore. It's too complicated for me. We've got to change the tyres. Maybe we've got to change the commentator.
We loved it. Clearly, a lot of people weren't happy with how the race unfolded. And we saw some of that in our live comments, which was quite depressing. And we've touched on this before, that at this point in the season, I really don't understand why, if you don't like what you're seeing, why you're still watching. But Lukey sent us a voicemail with his thoughts on the subject.
Hi, guys. It's Lukey. A lot of people have been talking this week about old tyres and Pirelli and how tyres have become Formula One. And I don't understand why we've got to be negative. I don't get why we should all just sit around complaining about it, saying it's not Formula One, and it's not this, and it's not that, and it's not, you know, not gravy, and it's not whatever. What is Formula One? I mean, what? How can you define a person's definition of Formula One if, at the end of the day, there are still 22 cars racing around the circuit, and there is still a race going on, in which, A, it's not a bad race going on. In fact, they've all been very good. And B, we've had far worse in modern history. We've had far worse than what we've got in Formula One right now. And I love the state of Formula One is at the moment, because there's nothing to be negative about. I think we take for granted a bit too much the kind of luck that we have as fans to have people like Pirelli, who come into the sport, they've completely jeopardized their image to create tyres which cause drama, cause general kind of genuine thinking, strategies that have to be played out between teams separately. And it's just a different ballgame to 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we had Michael Schumacher at the front of the grid, pole to finish every, you know, 10 times, 12 times a year. And Formula One fans should appreciate what's there and not simply tear it apart for its own good, because there's nothing to be torn apart, which I agree is a bit ironic, me saying that when the tyres are getting torn apart. But I mean, I get the arguments that people say that Formula One drivers should be racing at the edge, and that's true, they should, but they are racing at the edge. It's not any less risky. They're still racing determined to win. They're still going to think of the best way to do it, and the teams are still going to think of the best way to do it for their drivers and for their teams. And that's all part of the game now that Formula One is, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. That's just what Formula One is, and if you don't like it, don't watch it. And that's just what I've got to say about it, because I love to see the Formula One's in, and I love watching the races, and I love trying to work out what the hell's going on. Fair enough, four stops is probably a bit too much, but two or three stops, not a problem. Four stops if need to be, but it's a good race. Who the hell cares? If I'm enjoying it, who the hell cares? And if it's still continuing to be as good as it's been for the past 2 years or so, then who the hell cares? Formula One is something to be proud of, and Formula One is something to be happy about. And we shouldn't ruin the sport, because the moment we ruin the sport and the moment we take for granted what we've got as fans and the amount of action we've had in the past 2 years with the likes of DRS and Kurs and tyres, then Christ, we're going to be back where we were 10 years ago, and regression is not the way forward. So that's my two cents on tyres. Let's all just enjoy it. Let's just enjoy it and not moan and complain. And Formula One is awesome, and that's all we need to remember, really.
I do like a positive voicemail. Thank you for that, Lukey. I very much appreciate that. How do people send in voicemails if they would like to contribute similar positive thoughts on anything about F1 or things we've discussed today?
Yeah, people don't have to agree with us, but positivity is always a good thing. The number to call is 01212887225, or you can email mp3s to me, christine@sidepodcast.com, if you don't like voicemails, but we do like them. You can always email me at that address, or leave a message via the contact form, which is sidepodcast.com/contact. There are so many ways to get in touch. You've just got no excuse.
I think that wraps up what appears to be an ever-changing situation when it comes to Formula One tyres. I think we've covered all the bases there. We know where we're at right now. We don't know where we're going to be in a few races to come. We do know what will happen at the Monaco Grand Prix, but that appears to be the only... That's as far ahead as we can look right now, pending any further changes from the FIA or Pirelli or complaints from Red Bull.
Much like the news broadcasts you see on TV, I think we should end with some less controversial stories that have caught our eye over the past few weeks. And the big one is that Honda are coming back to Formula One.
Hooray!
Yay! In 2015, which is ages away.
That is forward-looking and forward-planning on Formula One's part.
You just said we can only look as far as the Monaco Grand Prix. I think that 2015 is far too long away, but I must say I'm glad they're coming back because I need a new coat.
I am very much looking forward. Is that you need a new? That's all you care about?
Pretty much.
You love your Honda coat so much that their return to Formula One is less important than you getting more merchandise.
I thought you'd be surprised that I'm still wearing the coat.
I am. What I am looking forward to, apart from you getting a new coat, is the return of My Earth Dreams. Because I do miss that concept, and I think that does need to, that needs to have a, that's due a comeback in Formula One.
Are they going to paint the engine green? Because that's okay, because no one's going to see it.
They should. It would actually be more relevant now than it was at the time that they launched it, because we've got, you know, we've got these eco engines, we've got energy recovery coming into Formula One. My Earth Dreams will fit in beautifully, and thank you to McLaren for bringing that, that allowing that concept to come back.
I am a bit concerned for McLaren though, because they still have a year and a bit of their engine partnership with Mercedes, and surely Mercedes is just going to hate them now.
I think they have already said that the flow of information will be reduced next year.
That can't be good.
Well, there's nothing. This year's fine. I mean, apart from anything, McLaren are dog slow.
Doesn't make any difference.
Doesn't make any difference to anything. But and next year, the engines are all changing. That's when the knowledge will be gained and gleaned. Honda are doing a great thing by leaving it a year. They've got 12 months to have a look at what everyone else is doing and making, you know, being able to make smarter decisions and more educated decisions. McLaren could be at a disadvantage if Mercedes are keen to keep their engine under wraps. They obviously have to supply them. So you know, there's only so much you can keep from a team who have two of your engines in their garage. But we'll see. We'll have to see. I mean, we can speculate to our heart's content, and there is plenty of time for us to do that.
And we will.
But we don't actually have an awful lot of information to go on right now.
It's good news, really, though, for the FIA, because they are rewriting the regulations to try and encourage engine manufacturers back, and that seems to be working. Does this mean we're going to see Toyota and BMW come back as
well? This is a huge validation of Jean Todt's big dream, his big concept.
His big Earth dream?
Jean Todt's Earth dream, yes. I mean, this is massive validation. It's exactly what he needed. It's great to see Honda make that move. Toyota, I think, are going great guns with the prototype concept they've got for their Le Mans Challenger. Maybe they might be able to, maybe they might consider coming back to Formula One. Very hard to say, but I'm damn sure Honda won't be the only new engine partner to come into Formula One, which is good. It's just what we need. Maybe, you know, who else left when Honda did? BMW, Toyota? They could all come back. It could be a big old noughties reunion.
In between the Bahrain and Spanish Grand Prix, for some reason, attention turned to Silverstone, the circuit, and they said, out of nowhere, that their sales are down 10%, and they blamed Sebastian Vettel.
This
must be before Red Bull said that they can't do anything with the tyres and everything, they're not winning anything and life sucks.
Yes.
Silverstone think that because Vettel keeps winning, people aren't going to turn up to the race.
This has to be the most fantastic piece of public relation misdirection I have ever witnessed. Because let just remind me what happened at Silverstone last year. Was it not the case that fans attending the Friday Grand Prix were trapped in their cars for 9 hours in traffic jams?
They said they're going to sort that. There's a park and ride and all sorts going on.
Excellent.
Now. It's nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with the weather.
Wait,
it's Vettel's fault.
Is it not to do with, then, the fact that on the Friday it rained so hard the fans who got into the circuit only saw 4 racing laps?
No.
Nothing to do with that.
No.
Could it be that all the fans who had tickets last year for the Saturday were told not to come at all? Because the ground couldn't hold their cars and their traffic?
No. Let me tell you.
Is it then? Go on.
Derek Warwick said, if Lewis and Jensen start winning from Barcelona, and we all know McLaren can turn around their car, that makes a... we all know that. That makes a massive difference for us. And Richard Phillips, who is, I think, managing director, he said, with F1, we've a combination of what happened last year with the weather and probably, controversially, you Vettel doing a little too consistently well for us.
Come on! Sebastian Vettel has done consistently well for the last 3 years and it hasn't affected ticket sales.
Well, it is now, even though he's not doing consistently well. It's weird that they picked the 1 year he's not doing that. But
it's not weird. Fans aren't turning up because they got ripped off last year because the organisation was blooming terrible. Anyone can see that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully their measures to fix that. I mean, they did say that
they've dug a hole.
The weather.
Be honest. What measures have they actually implemented? A park and ride in some man with a shovel.
The weather last year was exceptional. But they are trying to put measures in place and they have some kind of park and ride scheme. So hopefully that will fix it. And then hopefully for their sake, Vettel doesn't keep winning because apparently that's what's making the difference. The other story I noticed, I just found this quite amusing. It was about drivers being fined for speeding in the pit lane. Now, we saw in Spain, Pastor Maldonado was speeding in the pit lane and he got a drive-through penalty. Mm-hmm. But if they don't do it in the race, and it's in a practice session, they would usually see a fine for such things. And this story caught my attention because the drivers have been complaining that they're being fined when they were told they wouldn't be. The super licenses got really, really expensive recently, didn't they? Was that this year?
Previous to this, yep.
And that was, they accepted that with the proviso that they wouldn't be fined for.
Right. For pit lane speeding infringements.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the FIA have agreed to look into the matter. A compromise deal has been reached whereby teams are now fined instead of the drivers. So the compromise from the FIA is that, okay, we won't penalise you. We will just get the money from someone else.
That is such an F1 solution, isn't it? We promised we wouldn't charge you anymore. So we're just going to charge someone else
I would have thought that teams were paying for it anyway.
They do for the really poor drivers who can't afford the fines. I'm reasonably sure the teams pay their bills, but the highly paid drivers you'd expect to pay them themselves. What I don't understand, and maybe I'm missing something in this story, but where is the disincentive not to speed if you're never going to get fined?
Yeah, that's true.
What are the FIA thinking here? I'm lost in that case. They want a more consistent amount of income from the super licenses, so to hell with the speeding fines?
I'm not sure what's going on there, but I do like the idea that you get fined relative to how much over the speed limit you are.
Mm.
Well, I think they should do that.
Fine. Why have they changed it?
I think they should do that in real life as well, out on the roads.
No points. Well, there is talk of bringing in penalty points on drivers' super licenses. So, you know, they're no longer getting fined, but they may get, for different infringements.
10 points on your licence and you're out.
Essentially, yeah.
Do you have to take one of them courses? Safer driving courses
road
or whatever.
Safety awareness course, yeah. I can think of some drivers that who that might actually benefit.
There is no race this weekend, but we will still be watching something vaguely F1 related, and that is the Eurovision Song Contest.
And this is vaguely related because it's in Europe?
No, I will tell you why. We've actually been watching and live commenting the Eurovision Song Contest for several years, but this year it is very pertinent to Formula One because Alonso's ex-wife is representing Spain.
Oh, I do like her.
Go Spain!
I do like her band. Is that who we're supporting this year then?
Well, we're not supporting, get your vote? Not supporting Britain because A, we can't vote for ourselves, and B, it's a rubbish song. So yeah, why not?
Spain will get your vote for Sonny El de Morfeo.
El Sueño de la Morfeo.
That band. You can tell we're both huge fans of Alonso's ex-wife's band. Their song isn't actually...
It's not much better, but we've got to vote for someone.
Yeah, it's vaguely F1 related. Can I vote for Finland because they had some world champions once?
You can vote for whoever you want.
So that's what we're going to do. We shall support Spain. We shall support Fernando Alonso's ex-wife. Yay for Spain. Yay for the Spanish Grand Prix. Yay for Fernando Alonso. We support Formula One in all walks of life.